From Chicago, on the north side, doing work, getting ready to go back home. It's done. Listening to the Gangland Wire podcast on my iPod. Talk to you later. Bye.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire. Creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. Welcome back to the classic old Ice House building in Midtown, Kansas City. I'm here tonight with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
What was it that our friend Ben Ellickson, he made that little video, he made that took that shot that I put up on Facebook of you and I. We did a selfie here in the studio, and I put it up for some reason. And maybe it was a Christmas card kind of a... Anyhow, I put it up, so he snagged it, and he put it down, and he put he wrote, "Hello, Aaron," backwards for you to read off your cue cards. Did you see that, one?
I thought that was for you to read.
Because I say, "Hello, Aaron," and you say, "Hello, Aaron," and so that was, "Hello, Aaron," and it was backwards.
I thought it was, "Say hello, Aaron," was what he wrote backwards.
Oh, was it? Maybe that's what it was, but anyhow.
To remind you that that was like going to be a T-shirt or something.
Yeah, really. That'd make a good T-shirt, wouldn't it? Anyhow, well.
Thank you, Ben Ellickson.
Thank you, Ben. I hope you're, this last month, this won't come out this month, Chicago Outfit's going on, Chicago Outfit Month is going on right now. We have had two shows with Bulldog John Drummond, which was a great guest, and then Frank Calabrese Jr. Those were fantastic interviews, weren't they, Aaron?
Yeah, that's some amazing opportunities to talk to the men who actually did it.
Who actually did it. That was a great story you had about the killing of Billy Logan, and they started to follow this Billy Logan and his wife away from the courthouse one day with the camera crew, and they didn't, and he was waylaid and shot and killed on his way home from the courthouse that one particular day. I mean, it's always an adventure up there in Chicago, I think, back in the 70s and 80s and in the 60s.
Well, you know, they were pretty serious about, you know, their business.
Outfit was deadly serious about their business. I'm working on, it's going to be a pretty long show. It might be three episodes. The story of Harry Aleman, who was a hitman for the Outfit up there, that's always kind of captured my imagination for some reason, partly because he was only half Italian, and his other part was Mexican. I think his dad was Mexican, his mom was Italian. But he was a very prolific hitman for the Outfit for a long time. Plus, I think he ran some kind of a home invasion robbery crew to make money besides doing the hits for him. Tonight, Aaron, I got that app, and I had a little problem with the app. You guys, if you had a little problem with the app, it should be fixed. And if it's not working quite right, delete it and download it again. My developer uploaded version 3.0, and we had a heck of a time getting Apple to take it, because they did not. It's kind of weird that these are the people that created it, and I get the account. I give them the account
information,
the name and the password, then they upload the app, and then they had the account information again, and they uploaded the app, and now all of a sudden Apple says you have to do it yourself. You can't have somebody else do it, which doesn't make sense to me. But so they said, well, have them send you a binary file. Well, I don't know what a binary file is. Do you, Aaron, know what a binary file is? Well,
probably the file, it's all ones and zeros.
I guess, I don't know. But, so I got hold of them, and of course they're actually in another country, and we, between the two of us, we finally got it up, and it seemed to be working. I just got an email tonight, and a man said that the It was working, except the audio wasn't working. And I had the same problem on my iPhone. And folks, if you got an iPhone and the sound isn't working, but the videos are playing, make sure your ringer's turned on. If your ringer's turned off, the sound won't play. If you try just straight to YouTube, even though your ringer's turned off, the sound will play.
But in
your
app.
Or Netflix. But through my app, if your ringer's turned off, the sound won't play. Figure that one. I had to Google that to get that answer.
So all you have to do, really, is just bump the volume up on that toggle.
Yeah.
So when you're using your phone with the app. Or what are you going to do? Because you've been an Apple man here for a while with your iPhone, and now you have
an Android phone. Well, we'll see.
You're going to have to download your own app to check it out on your iPad.
I've got an iPad, so I can, because I can't get it on in the Google Store, which is a whole other long story that I won't bore you with the details on that. And just suffice it to say that we hate Google. If you got any connections with a Google Play Store inside connections, is somebody I can talk to find out what the problem is and see if I can't make them happy, we'll put it back up on the Android store. I thought I had another workaround, but I can't seem to get it done.
Well, long story short, it was somebody allegedly hacked into the account.
I guess.
Seemed like where it started, and then maybe it was somebody they messed with, and then Google was like, with the Android version, was like, stop, that's it, we're not doing it. And they wouldn't even acknowledge anything after they said, we're done with it.
Right. They gave me a chance to appeal, and I appealed and said, you know, somebody hacked my account. It was my fault. I fell for a spear phishing thing. And Google's the one that caught it before they got a hold of me and said, hey, you know, looks like somebody may have hijacked your account. And I looked at it and had a different recovery phone and had a different recovery email. And so I changed the password immediately.
Did you call that phone number?
No, I did. It's like Morocco or somewhere in Africa. Anyhow.
Well, we've got fans all over the world. But
really, I don't know if we got any.
I don't think that's really a fan. Now, we also have to say thank you to Bill McClendon.
Oh, yeah. Bill bought the app, and he couldn't get it to work. And he was, thanks, Bill. He's one of the first people that notified me that it wasn't working right. So that's when I started working on it. And finally, it took me about a week and a half or 2 weeks to get it worked out. And I kept emailing back to him. And there was another guy that emailed me at the same time. And I kept him apprised of what was going on, that we were working on it. And finally, he sent me a email after I got it fixed, and he said that he appreciated it, and he made a donation. He is now the capo of the Youngstown, Ohio Mafia. So thank you very much, Bill. I sent your digital rewards already, and I put your movie and your book and a couple other little things. I included a little extra because you were a guy that I could then email back and say, hey, what's the app doing now? Is it working yet?
Yeah.
Rather than just depending on my phone. And you'd always get back with me. So you got some thanks stuff coming in the mail, and we really appreciate it. Bill suggested we do something on the Youngstown Mafia, and I remember that there was a mafia presence in Youngstown, Ohio, back in, especially during the war and after, up in the 40s, I mean the 50s and 60s. So I looked it up a little bit, and there is quite a little bit of information. I have to go research that.
Youngstown, Ohio was a pretty big industrial base, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of unions there, and the mob's always in on those guys in the union.
Yeah, and you got a whole lot of blue-collar workers in town. You got a whole lot of people wanting prostitutes. Not saying the blue-collar workers the only one that use a prostitute, but you got a lot of working guys. You got booze and whores and gambling, and you know, when you need booze, whores, and gambling, who steps in to usually provide those services, Aaron?
The mob
is always Johnny on the spot with that. So we will be researching and doing a story on the Youngstown, Ohio Mafia.
Thanks to Bill McClendon.
Thanks a lot, Bill. I appreciate it. Got another new listener. Oh, and Bill, I didn't write down exactly what he said, but he said he loved the podcast. I tried to get him to call. Bill, call 931-3535, 816-931-35, any of you guys. And when the message comes on, because I never answer my phone unless I know who it is, just say, my name is Aaron, and I'm from Podunk City, Utah, and I love Gangland Wire. Gangland Wire is the best podcast in the world, and then we'll put that on, and when people start to listen to the show, that will be the first thing they hear.
Yeah, we'll add that in. But don't say your name is Aaron unless it actually is.
Well, there may be some other Aarons. Anyhow, let me read this one. Mike Durham, he's a truck driver who works overnight. And he happened to stumble onto the show, and he said he looks forward to listening to it every night. That's like our friend Ben up in Chicago. He listens to it while he's running his heavy equipment, while he's running his backhoe and his ditch diggers and everything. Mike, I appreciate your input and that you really look forward to listening to our podcast. That's what we try to be informative and entertaining. Aaron provides the entertainment, and I tried to provide the information, right, Aaron?
Something like that. And then when you got your phone replaced, you went over to the Verizon store, and you ran into a couple of guys who happened to know me.
I told him about the podcast, and this one guy, he immediately pulled it up and subscribed. He said, I love true crime podcasts. And he said, well, who's your co-host? You said you do it with somebody. I said, Aaron Gnerk. And he said, oh, I know him. I'm a stand-up comedian, and Aaron's a stand-up comedian, so... Small world, Aaron.
That's right.
Here's Mike Durham asked a question about a story from his past. He said when he was about 10 years old, he and some of his friends would go to a little corner tavern here in Kansas City where their dad used to hang out, and he met a local guy named Dean Hampton, who drove a tow truck. And for a tow company, I won't mention that, but he said he thought that tow company was a front for the local mob, and it could have been, or at least they may have had an interest in it. And we did the show about the tow truck driver from Milwaukee, who was a relocated witness from Milwaukee, had a tow company. He thought it might have been this Dean Hampton, and I already replied to him. It was not Dean Hampton. Mike suggests that we look into the St. Louis crime family in the war between the Leisure family and the Michaels, which is not that is Lebanese and Syrian organized crime, you know, all around the Mediterranean, Greeks and Turks and Lebanese and Syrians and Spain, Italy, France, all around the Mediterranean, you've got different crime families. Corsicans that have these long-held roots in those areas. So this is about the Syrian organized crime people. So, and it would be an interesting topic. I just have to, you know, 7 million stories in Naked City or the Naked Country, or the Naked World, and this is just another one of them. I need to get into that. I've read up on that, and I know about it.
We've talked about it a little bit before.
A little bit,
about the fact that there really isn't a large Italian mob
in
St. Louis, and that it is Syrian based, which is kind of surprising.
Oh, you know, there's an interesting little story. We got to do one on a local mob guy a local criminal named Wolf Reinman, who was killed here in the early 50s, I believe, just before the two Charlies were killed. And his name, or Wolf Reinman, ran a joint out in the county and outside the city, and he had the sheriff in his pocket, and he was getting all the bar owners and restaurant owners in the county outside the city of Independence or Kansas City and the rural areas and maybe some of the small towns that didn't have their own police. And since he had the sheriff in his pocket, he was lining them all up to put slot machines in their bars, and he wasn't going to give the local outfit a piece of the action. Well, guess who is getting in his car? His car. I got these old reports. A guy sent me all these old 1950s reports that the police had done. He had a siren in his car, a siren that was mounted out on the hood, the front fender of his car. The sheriff had given him some red lights and siren for his car and made him some kind of a deputy, special deputy. But the deal was he was going to make a lot of money off these slot machines that were going in, and the sheriff was on board with the deal. Cut out the mob. The mob then puts a hit out on him. They kill him. They drive off in a 1948 Ford. They abandoned the Ford, and it was 1948 because it was a brand new car. It only had 1,600 miles on it, I think. They abandoned the car, and when the police find it, they find. Remember, we did the story about the Chicago hit car.
Mm-hmm.
When it had those
special compartments,
secret compartments. This car, this 1948 Ford, had three secret compartments that were lined in what they called a high grade, expensive, soft red leather. In which one was underneath the back seat, which when you pulled up the seat, you could see the impression of where a long gun had been. And then there was two smaller boxes underneath both the front seats of the passenger and the driver's seat. With these, what they call welded boxes that were lined with the same leather that had pistols in them.
That would seem like, you know, if you're getting a brand new car from the manufacturer, that's probably not a standard model.
That's not standard option that you can have. That's not listed on the, little paper that they put on the side of the car, on the window of all the different options. That's not an option. You got to come up with that one yourself. I'm surprised. Aaron, aren't you kind of surprised that they abandoned the car? They'd bought it less than a year before. They had registered it in a guy's name, Lee Harris, and the address was for the Waiters and Bartenders Union down on 12th Street, which was controlled by the mob.
Well, wait, though. They wouldn't. Normally, though, when they do something like that, they just steal the car.
Normally, in modern times.
And then they dump the car.
Yeah, modern times, they steal the car and then keep it hid out until they're ready to do it, maybe get another set of tags and put on it that are cool, and then go do the hit and then dump the car. This was a car specially bought for this purpose, or this kind of a purpose. I don't know if it was specially bought for this. They paid, $2,300 for it, and then just dumped it right afterwards. I don't know. Go figure. They must have had more money than they knew what to do with. They just go get another one. Anyhow, so I need to do the story. We ought to get Bill Owsley in on the story on Wolf Reinman and his problems with the local outfit, because that was just the end of a long series of problems. He thought he didn't need to do anything with the mob in Kansas City, and they showed him, didn't they?
Yeah, you can't really cut them out, or they'll just cut you out.
Really?
Did you? No. So there was a comment. I know we broke here at Christmas, and now we're probably, by the time this comes out, it's going to be sometime maybe in February, but our good friend, airline hijacker Martin McNally, did you see he had commented on our The Bank Robber and the School Teacher Part 1?
Oh, yeah. He was wanting to help the guy out with his, shall we say, jailhouse lawyer expertise, and he does have. He did help a lot of people out when he was in the joint, because he's a really bright guy, and he can go do that legal research and knows how all those systems work. He knew the judge that sentenced this guy, the federal judge that sentenced the guy. What he didn't understand, I had explained to him, was that Martin was wanting to help him in the federal system because he knows how that system works and what might work for him. He thought he might help him out, but he's already done his federal time. His federal time of, 7 years or 6 years?
6 years.
6 years.
70 months, I think.
Something like that is done. He's done that time. He's still got about, 13 more years of state time to do for the exact same crimes. It's like a double jeopardy thing, only there's a special law in a few states, and Missouri is one of them. I can't remember the name of it now, where the feds can prosecute you for a crime. And if it's like a bank robbery under federal bank robbery charges, and then the state can prosecute you for just straight robbery charges. They don't really care who the victim was. It was an armed robbery. And so he got 20 years on that. And Martin was wanting to help him out, but I emailed back to him and advised him, his problem is not with the feds, it's with the state.
Yeah.
He knew that. He said, I know that judge, and she's real fair, but it's too late. That judge isn't going to, the federal judge can't help you at all.
But he writes here on December 4th, you can find it in the comments section there. He says, just listen to the entire interview, funny, too. I didn't think that, our interview with, in the prison was pretty, we didn't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Basically,
I don't remember the funny parts.
I guess you got an hour.
You probably started making jokes. Yeah.
Well, I don't try to make fun of the topic or the person as much as whenever we're in a conversation with somebody or talking about something. If I just whatever sort of strikes me.
Yeah.
And I'll say it, I'm not necessarily saying it because I think, oh, this is going to be funny.
Sometimes it's funny.
But sometimes it's funny.
Martin apparently thought something you said was funny because it sure wasn't me. I'm not funny at all.
Yeah. He says Donald is smart but stupid too. He should be out of prison. A federal judge could order him released ASAP. I'll look into this case.
Yeah.
I'll send a private message as to what I need. Did 37 years in the joint and doing well. It didn't destroy me as it does many inmates. Don did 12 banks, not smart enough to get the vault and retire. Few people know how to get the vault. Have a nice day.
Well, that's our friend Martin.
Yeah, well, wait till he listens to our interview with that guy who was the soldier for the Gambino crime family.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew DiDonato,
yeah.
I was waiting to see if you remember it, and I remembered it. Yeah. Andrew DiDonato, which will be out when you hear this episode, and Andrew... They scored $400,000.
$400,000 in the bank gig, spent it all on lawyers.
Yeah, but he had to divide it by seven, so.
Yeah, that's true. There was a lot of
extra guys running that crew.
Fingers in that pie.
Somebody with the house nearby the bank.
Yeah.
I bet he got a good cut.
And I was, I heard that same kind of a story. I was sitting with one of my sources here in the local mob, and it was a couple years ago, I guess, and one of his other buddies came up, and so this guy was, my buddy was, telling this other guy who I was, and so we started talking crime stuff, and he starts telling a story about back in the, probably the 50s or 60s, this guy had been that old, he was a young guy, and he had a house that was close to a post office, and these guys who were mob-connected guys came to him and said, offered him a certain amount of money, but he had to leave his garage unlocked. Now, this is one of these old garages, older neighborhood, and they had an alley that went between the houses. Those are neighborhoods where you got an alley between the houses and you got garages in the back, and you go down the alley and you pull back into the garage, put your trash out in the back, and the trash guy comes down the alley and picks it up. So the deal was they were going to give him a certain amount of money, but all he had to do was leave that garage unlocked and not ask any questions. We're real close to this post office. So he did. And, and then a car appeared, and then a car disappeared. And they gave him, like $50 or $100 or something, pretty good amount of money for nothing. And especially, I think it was in the 50s or maybe the early 1960s. It was I'd say, more like $400 or $500 today. And that's what they did. They robbed the post office and then ran down the street just real close and dumped the getaway car and then got out and walked away. So that, those kinds of things do happen. I've read about a couple other robbers that made sure they had some place to drive to that was within just a few minutes of their target. This one was bank robbers. And I know it was a big deal. And they set up, the police blocked all the streets all around this town before they should have been able to get out of the dragnet or the roadblocks. Of course, they were already in a garage by the time the police even got to the bank.
And at that point, I don't know how you would be able to figure out where they're at.
Well, you just have to hope that somebody happened to see them drive up the street and pull into the house and then knows about the bank robbery and knows that this was a getaway car, so... that's a lot of ifs. That's,
yeah.
So it,
you really got to hopefully have somebody who is a good citizen.
Yeah, and people aren't
a lot of folks knowing what's going on might say, "I'm just going to look the other way."
Yeah,
this is not my problem. This is the cop's problem.
This is the police's problem. Yeah. Some people are like that. Everybody and
well, we've got a story tonight that has some similarities there.
It certainly is a story about robberies, and what's interesting is the shoes on the other foot in this one. You may have seen or heard of this movie, Rob the Mob. It's on Netflix right now. If you haven't seen it, get on your Netflix, Rob the Mob, and get that movie and watch it. A friend of mine, Aaron, a guy who was a mob associate back in the day and has really gone into recovery from drug addiction and led a really squirge-on life. Most people that knew him today would go, he what? He used to do what? I think he had a shootout with the police at one time, and he used to do these kind of high-end robberies. And anyhow, he told me after he saw this movie when it first came out, he said, "Man," he said, "you got to see this." He said, "This is what it's really like, the mob." It's got a couple of unknowns in it. The real life guy is a guy named Tommy Uva, and the guy who plays him is somebody named Michael Pitt. And if you ever watched the first couple of three seasons of Boardwalk, he played an Irish guy named Jimmy Darmody, who was a recently out of the military, fought in World War One, and was also kind of a psychopathic killer with a little bit of a conscience. And this Michael Pitt played him, and the character the character in this is Thomas Uva, and his wife Rose Marie, maiden name was Detoma Uva, and she was played by Nina Arianda. And Nina Arianda, when you see her, you'll say, I've seen her on TV. She's won a Tony on Broadway, but she was in a lot of different TV shows, and particularly The Good Wife. I remember her being in The Good Wife, and the rest of them, one of my wife remembered. I can't remember what it was now, but you'll know her when you see her. Now, Aaron, this movie shows this couple, Tommy Uva and Rose Marie Uva, doing a series of robberies, and they get married. I think the show's got a little bit out of sequence. We won't really go into that, but they start doing a series of robberies. Now, they were married before the robberies started. The movie shows them getting married after they did some robberies and started getting some extra money, and so they blew a lot of money on a really nice wedding and champagne and all that. But in real life, they were already married when they started the robberies, right after Tommy, he'd done a burglary and he'd just gotten out of prison. They were married. He went to work where she did, which was for a collection company. She was probably a drug addict too, more than likely, and they depict them both as drug addicts. They depict them as being obsessed with the mafia, and what they wanted to do is rob the mob guys inside their social clubs. I kind of looked up, in Kansas City we had three social clubs. We had the Trap, which is where all the real deal mob guys hung out and played cards. I think they had an espresso machine in there, just like in the movies. Anybody's ever watched any mob movies, real mob movies, where they show the inside of the social club, they'll show an espresso machine.
That's so you know they're Italian.
Yeah, really. What was that one where Tony Spilotro, Joe Pesci played a character and he shot that guy in the foot. He started acting like in the old cowboy movies, they'd shoot at somebody's feet and say, "Dance, man, dance." So he starts shooting at this kid. I think his nickname was Spider. Starts shooting his feet, and he hit him in the foot. God, it was crazy. I think that might have been in Goodfellas because he played a really crazy character in Goodfellas, even crazier than the character he played in Casino. But anyhow, the Trap, the Old Man's Club, what we called the Old Man's Club, where the older men would go and play cards and hang out, and then they had what we called the Young Guys Club. Now, they had other names for them. I never really knew what they were.
Now, was that where the Basta Boys went?
The Basta Boys all went to the Young Guys Club and hung out there, played cards there. Older mob guys were seen going in there and maybe talking to certain guys. Guys that were involved in the organization's sports gambling, you would see the older gambling men come in there, and then they'd take somebody outside, and you'd see them engage in conversation. It would have to be about running the sports book, because some of them were involved in running the sports book. They were all down in Columbus Park area, which is what we call Little Italy, just within a few blocks of each other.
Kind of part of the old Northeast,
right,
of Kansas City.
Right. New York City, they had all these clubs. They had a lot of them. They had these colorful names. Or they had some names that you wonder probably something to do with the area that the club sat in. There was a Triangle, there was a Ravenite, and it seemed like that had something to do with Gotti. The 19th Hole, that must have been close to a golf course. Wimpy Boys, the Panel, Palma Boys, Bergen Hunt and Fishing Club. Now that was definitely Gotti's. The Parnell, the Banner Civic Association, the Knotty Pine, the Shoreview, Veterans and Friends, Cafe Liberty, and One Over Golf Club. Oh, there's one more, the Hawaiian Moonlighters. I don't know where they got that, but be interesting to know the history of how they got these names.
Well, it'd be interesting to know the addresses of them as well.
Yeah.
That'd be great to add to the app.
Yeah, really. On Chicago, as I've researched different stories in Chicago, I know they've got one that's now, actually it's now a nice Italian-American restaurant, an Italian restaurant. It's called the Old Neighborhood Italian-American Club. And the 26th Street Crew, which was started and operated for a long time by Angelo LaPietra, the Hook. Then there's the Survivors Social and Athletic Club on Taylor Street, and that's where Joe Ferriola ran the Taylor Street Crew. And that's that I got ran onto that one when I was researching Harry Aleman. He hung out there all the time.
Kind of funny that they'd call it the Survivors Social.
I know. I'd like to know what the history of that is. Maybe one of our Chicago people out there might know that. I found the location of that. I've made note of it in my notes for the Harry Aleman story. We'll go back over that then.
Well, and then it says it's an athletic club. You think they got weights and
yeah, probably
doing bench pressing and stuff like that there. Doesn't seem like that.
At least the other one, they had a lot of Italian-Americans there, so and truth in advertising there. Now, the Survivors Social and Athletic Club, it was probably so social. They were all survivors. Now, I don't know about the athletic club part of it. They had a gym in there or not. Maybe they did. These social clubs like this, they're all over the United States. Every major city that has a La Cosa Nostra family will have one, more, two, three, or more of these social clubs. And they've been described as criminal nests where mob guys or gangsters gather. And they're like flocks of vultures gathering every day from Monday through Sunday. I mean, it's every day. I remember sitting on a Super Bowl Sunday one year. I had to sit on the trap down there and document who was coming and going, because they had a wiretap on the phone and they had a bug in there, and they needed to know if whenever the named person came to the social club, then they could turn on the microphone inside.
You mean named in the actual
named in the affidavit?
Affidavit
for the wire.
That they had to do for the wire.
They couldn't turn it on unless one of the named targets was inside the club. So, inside these clubs, they play cards, they drink espresso. Anybody seen a mob movie that had this? They smoke and joke, and they discuss the latest line on the upcoming sporting events. And they also hatch a lot of criminal schemes and because they feel safe and comfortable and secure in these places. It's always in the neighborhood. Eventually, as the FBI got more and more sophisticated with their hidden microphones, they became places where they would walk outside. And if you remember in our friend Ben Ellickson, speaking of Ben Ellickson again, yeah, he made our that little video where they, and this was
surveillance video.
It was in Casino the Frank Vincent character and the Tony Spilotro or the Joe Pesci character actors walked out of a club and they held their hands over their mouths to prevent lip readers from reading their lips. And the FBI did hire lip readers for a while and would try to see what they were saying with lip readers, and they'd hold their hands over their mouth. So he plugged in, as it looked like they were talking, he plugged in this, which is, I guess, from
Charlie Brown,
the teacher and Charlie Brown. That's what Charlie Brown's hears when the teacher's talking. There you go. It was friggin' hilarious. God, I was just dying. That thing, folks, you gotta see that little video that he did. I put it up on my Facebook page. I'll put it back up again every once in a while. Just go down through my Gangland Wire Facebook page until you find the surveillance video.
Maybe put it up on ganglandwire.com.
Oh, I could put it up on the website.
Embed it.
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
That way, if anybody's mad, they'll know they can be mad at Ben Ellickson. He's the one that did it, not us.
He does kind of make fun of Gotti and some of the other mob guys in another part of it.
We're not doing that. I mean, it's ironic that we talked with Frank Culotta, and he was telling the story about how when they were at the upper crust with Tony Spilotro, and the teller comes across from the bank and says, there's guys in there watching you.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that'll happen to you. That happened to us a couple more than once.
What about not Frank Culotta? What about Tuffy DeLuna? Didn't he have like a car shop here in town? It wasn't really a social club, but
no, you're thinking of it was kind of like a social club. You're thinking of Willie Camisano, Willie the Rat. He had a garage just off Independence and Monroe. Matter of fact, that's where they killed David Bonadonna. David Bonadonna had a brand new Mustang, standard transmission, green. And he was seen, that car was seen pulling in that garage, and the door was shut, and then the same guy happened to see it leave again, and whoever drove it out whenever he left could not drive a standard transmission very well. It was really uncomfortable driving a standard transmission, and they found the dude's body in the trunk of that car about a week later, about 10 blocks from there. So that was Willie the Rat's place. Matter of fact, that's you're talking about trying to bug them in those places, and this is they don't talk inside anymore. I just mentioned that. Well, sometimes they'll walk up the street and they'll stop at a certain place and always talk. So there was a post just up the street from Willie the Rat's place, and they'd see him meet people at the joint or in the garage and then walk up the street, and he'd always stop in the same place. So there was it was like some kind of trash, and it was a post there. So they put a microphone in that pile of trash and then ran the wire up the phone pole, the light pole or telephone. It was a wooden pole, ran the wire up, and then hooked it into the telephone lines, and we're trying to listen to him there. And somebody kicked the trash and uncovered the microphone. So they actually, I talked to the secretary who worked for their lawyer just here recently, and she was telling me the story that how they the lawyer, what was his name, Fox, Byron Fox was a lawyer, and Willie the Rat gave Byron Fox the
microphone
and all the wire that they pulled down, and then he gave it back to the strike force. So there's always interesting things happen around these clubs. We've sat around those, and you can see who's meeting with who, and you can kind of tell maybe what the pecking order is from their body language, and who's doing what, or at least who's doing something together. Sometimes people meet there and then go somewhere else, they're doing some kind of piece of business. We had another hidden microphone that disappeared, and that we found that in Tuffy DeLuna's house whenever we searched it. So
that wasn't a microphone from the trap?
I don't know. I can't remember where that one was from. I don't think it was from the trap. It might have been, but I can't remember.
I mean, you always see in movies and stuff where they bring in some device, and they're like, well, we're sweeping the room for bugs. And, when you think about it, that in the 70s, when you were working this late 70s into the 80s, and you didn't, there was not really cell technology, so you literally did have to wire the microphones into a telephone line to be able to tap them and record.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of device would you could sweep around, because like you say, they wouldn't even engage or turn on the microphone until one of the primary suspects who was in the affidavit showed up. I don't know how you would find the microphone there unless, in the instance of the trap, I think you had told the story in one of a previous episode where they basically always sat at this table at the back of the room, and so they had a guy with a black bag come in, and he put the microphone on the table, underneath the table, but had to run a wire up to it to get it to work.
Yeah, that was Villa Capri, actually. No,
Villa Capri.
The technology at that time, that was kind of people would take money to go sweep like that, but the best thing they could do when they're sweeping was take the phone apart and closely examine and find those kinds of things. The machine that looks for the radio waves, they do that too. And that really only worked for somebody wearing a wire that was sending a signal out. And
yeah,
and there might be some microphones and setups where they did have a wireless microphone that was trying to send a signal out to a van just outside, but they didn't use many of them. So you were not going to find, you could find a wire on somebody because it's sending a signal outside away from the person's body, whereas if it's a wired microphone, that doesn't send any signal out, so that doesn't do any good.
Yeah,
you just gotta have to know the technology, I guess. Anyhow,
you gotta know what you're looking for. They found a bug and you couldn't figure out where it came from at Tuffy's.
Yeah, so I mean, it'd be pretty easy to do. Just take the phone all apart and look for something that doesn't belong. You'd have to, have to know what the inside of a phone looks like. anymore, you know, take your the cell phone, you better just throw your cell phone away or not have it close to you, because they can take your cell phone and turn it into a microphone. And as far as, you know, any hidden planted microphones, you're never going to know if there's a tap, because the tap goes in down the street, maybe even not down the street anymore, probably goes in at the switching station. Or at the cell tower.
Well, now they've got different technology for the cell phones where they can replicate a cell phone tower.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
It's not quite a hound dog.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then it overpowers the signal. I was reading about this. It overpowers the regular cell signal, and your cell phone looks for the stronger signal.
Yeah.
And it attaches to their fake cell tower, and then they can get all of this trafficked information off of whatever you're doing with your phone.
Well, there you go.
It seems to me
pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, today it has to be much harder to be in the mob than it did back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Oh yeah,
because the ability of the police to surveil you,
yeah, follow you.
Yeah, now you know when somebody, you know, it used to be they'd hijack a semi, you know, right? They'd get all the cigarettes out of a semi and then they'd go off and sell them. Now, with all of the scanner technology and the ID tagging that they can do on products that have any real value, it seems like you can't do that kind of work.
Probably not. I don't know. You know, I'm not involved anymore. I know how much of that happens. You know, there are the ID tag things and but it's getting really easy to do. So it's getting harder and harder, I think, to be a thief.
Yeah. Well, it probably makes it harder and harder to try to, if you're going to rob somebody like the mob.
Yeah. Well, these guys were not sophisticated. Let me tell you a little bit about our good friend Tommy Uva and Rosemarie Uva, our friends. It was 1992 in the spring. And the movie got that right. They depicted that. And he and his wife were both working this collection agency. And you know what they do at collection agencies? They call up debtors and try to intimidate them or cajole them or threaten them or do whatever they can to get them to pay old back credit card bills or hospital bills or mainly credit card bills. They have a boss, a guy named Michael Schuschel, and he would later tell people that he remembered they were both this couple were entranced with Gotti, John Gotti and the Mafia. And the John Gotti trial was going on at that point in time, the last trial that he was in where Sammy Gravano or Sammy the Bull testified against him, and he ended up going to prison for the rest of his life. And they even asked for days off so they could both go down and attend the John Gotti trial. He was the Gambino boss at the time. Now, the movie suggests that Tommy Uva got the idea of robbing the social clubs because he was listening to Sammy the Bull testify, and Sammy the Bull testified in the movie that mob guys always played high-stakes card games and never carried guns inside of social clubs. You know, he did testify, and it's probably, if they ask him about these social clubs, he probably would give him that description, because that's true. You would not carry a gun in the social club. Unless you're setting somebody up to kill them, but more than likely on a day-to-day basis, mob guys don't just walk around with guns stuck in their belts anyhow.
Like they show them in the movies.
Well, I don't even know if they show that in the movies. I think a lot of people think they do, but they don't walk around with guns. If they have a piece of work to do, they go get the gun or tool and go do it. Well, Gotti's on trial during this time, and these guys are... they're drug addicts, like most drug addicts... drug addicts will make their decisions based on certain chemical feelings. They're invincible, and they never think ahead or think about the consequences of their actions, because they want to get that next hit. They want to get that pipe. They want to I'm trying to think of some of the other drug terminology, but...
Chase
the dragon's tail, yeah. Chasing the dragon. I just heard that song, Steely Dan. I didn't even know that's what that was. It comes from smoking heroin or opium, like Chinese have transported it in, I think, is kind of the history of that. They started robbing these clubs. It was said that in one club, he picked an interesting weapon. He somehow found an Uzi submachine gun. He was pointing it around at the guys in the club, and one of his victims said, "You know, hey dude," and this was in the movie, "You know, do you know what you're doing? you know who you're robbing here? He said, it said, wasn't in the movie. This was in real life. He looked at the guy. He was wearing a ski mask at the time, which they didn't really show him wearing a ski mask very much. He mainly did it open-faced. And he said, everybody dies. And, you know, that's just like a dead-end drug addict that just, you know, doesn't care about anything. Everybody dies. You know, it's kind of interesting in the movie. I like this. They showed him with this Uzi, fully automatic Uzi, and he's trying to figure out how to work it. And he figures out how to stick the clip in and get around in the chamber. But when he goes in, he's gonna fire around just for effect. Well, when you pull the trigger on a fully automatic, it just starts shooting.
Yeah.
And so you get a 3 or 4 shot burst. And whenever you get a burst, why, the automatic weapon will start, continuous recoil, and the barrel will just start going up and up and up. So if you're going to really be proficient with a machine gun, you need to put a hand on top of it so the barrel doesn't move up as you are letting loose rounds. So I'll have to say that I like it when they get the technical things in about guns and police work and all that and the law, when they get it right, and they got that right. They must have had a pretty good technical advisor on shooting a Uzi machine gun.
I'm looking here on the Wikipedia on the Uzi, and it says it is they started building them in 1954 to the present day, and it was what I was looking for was how many rounds does it fire. And where was that at? I think it said 600 rounds a minute. So, I mean, you can't hardly pull the trigger without emptying the clip.
Well, if you keep your finger on it very long, you're going to crank off 3 or 4 rounds. A lot of those machine guns like that will have a switch that will allow you to just shoot a 3-round burst.
Which select fire.
Yeah, which is kind of nice. Or you can turn it back to one shot at a time, too. It just depends on the weapon. I'm not sure about an Uzi. I didn't really look that up.
Here it says the Uzi uses an open bolt blowback operated design quite similar to the Japanese experimental Model 2 submachine gun and the Jaroslav Helchik design Czech ZK-476 prototype only. It's a submachine gun. You know, these are mob guys. They've had guns around them probably their whole life. So
yeah.
Maybe it was a good choice.
I think it was. I think it was.
And the fact that they're like, do you even know how to operate this thing? Do you know what you're doing?
Well, that would scare you more than right. if he was all calm and cool with it. When he didn't know what he was doing with it, but he just kept firing off rounds, that would scare me even more that he didn't know what he was doing with it. Yeah, as one New York reporter would say when this all came out later on about this whole thing, he said, was asked about, and he said, I don't know, maybe they were just plain stupid. They were just dumbass drug addicts that had somebody even said, well, you've heard of suicide by cop. Maybe this was suicide by mob guy. I don't know. The stress started taking its toll. The guy that they worked for pointed out that during this robbery spree, Rose Marie started fainting at work. And in particular, it was when people were passing around a newspaper that had an article about these robberies. Tommy would end up getting fired for fighting with Rose Marie at work. The MO that they used in every robbery was the same. Rose Marie had this old, and she talked about this car, old 1982 maroon Mercury Topaz 4-door.
And they have that one in the movie?
Well, you know, they depicted it. I don't know if that was a Mercury or not. It was more gray, I think, in the car, in the movie. But it was, that era of a car. And it was a 4-door. Tommy, she'd pull up in front. Tommy would jump out with his Uzi in one hand and used a pillowcase, according to the movie. In the other hand, and what I read about in real life, he did have some kind of a bag he brought in to grab the loot, and he'd run in and threaten everybody and have them fill the wallet with all their money, their wallets and jewelry.
Fill the bag with all the wallets and the jewelry and the money.
Yeah. Did I say that backwards?
You said fill the
wallets with money. Oh, yeah.
He's filling his wallet. But.
Oh, well, sometimes my tongue gets in front of my eye teeth.
I wonder if he had one of those Velcro wallets, you know. Put the money in there.
Yeah, really. But here's another interesting thing. He would tell everybody to drop their pants. so they couldn't like chase out after him, and then he'd run back, jump in the car, and Rosemarie would put the pedal to the metal and take off down the street at a high rate of speed. So they were not able to get out and see the car and get any kind of license plate number, because I understand it, they took absolutely no, they didn't change the plates or they didn't cover the plate or anything. They just drove up and jumped out and ran in robbery.
I wonder how much they cased out the joint before they went up to do the robbery.
Well, they knew enough that it was a mafia social club.
Yeah.
And that much, I don't know how much more. I mean, nothing I could find talked about how much they cased it.
I mean, you'd hate to walk in on a, you know, like a Monday morning and there's like three guys there.
Well, that happened in the movie. And I think it happened in this deal at least once. Just three old guys playing cards. They didn't really, and none of them had any money. Now, in the movie, and I think it was maybe the first robbery, Tommy made the guys all lay on top of each other and then act like they were humping the guy on the bottom. And what's interesting is they had to keep that a secret from everybody. Everybody had went to their death with that secret. They would never tell anybody, their boss even asked them about, well, tell me about this robbery, but they didn't say anything about that. And the boss said, well, is there something else you're not telling me? He said, oh, no, there's nothing else. And the other guy that was there at the robbery said, no, boss, there was nothing else. They just took the money.
They made us drop our pants, and we weren't wearing underwear.
Yeah, really.
And they're like, I didn't need to know that. You are Italian.
I couldn't find anything to substantiate that he really did that. Another thing in the movie, the film depicted the FBI was listening on a hidden microphone. We talked about those hidden microphones in the social clubs, and it depicted they were listening on it, listening to one of these robberies when the very first robbery when the gun was going off. And supposedly they then looked out to see what was going on, and they were able to take pictures of the men as they ran outside in their underwear. And then it showed later in the movie that they gave a New York Post reporter, and that was played by Ben Roy. That was played by Ray Romano. You know him, don't you?
He's a comedian.
He did a good job as a mob reporter.
And then he was in Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So supposedly this agent gave this New York Post reporter the story and one of the photos. Now, I couldn't find any documentation to support that really happened. I don't think it really happened. I don't think the robberies were ever reported to the police during this time. There's no media reports that I can find at all about this. The cops and the FBI agents did pick up rumors during this time that somebody was robbing the safe houses or the safe places, the social clubs, but we didn't know about it till later. That's a whole other part of the story on how we learned about this.
You wouldn't think the mob is going to go to the cops to have them help them to find out who's robbing them. I mean, you even have stories of guys getting shot and the cops coming up to the shot guy saying, who did it? And they won't tell them.
Right. And they didn't. Yeah, we had Carl Spiro. He knew darn good and well who shot him in the back when he ran across the street. And my friend Harold Nichols and Tommy Joe Walker were pulled up on the scene shortly after, you know, within minutes of the shooting, and the guys were already gone. And they said, Carl, who did it? And he said, I ain't saying. So, I mean, yeah.
These guys are going to take care of their business themselves.
I can take care of this themselves. Plus, it's too embarrassing making them drop their pants and a couple of punks or one punk and robbing them. Well, anyhow, I think we probably bored people long enough or entertained people long enough with this story. Let's do this in two episodes. We're going to talk about how the police even learned about this crime spree, because it's a whole different another story, which is interesting all standing alone. Gets into Gotti and Gotti's family and guys that work for Gotti. So I think we'll just come back next week and finish this story off, Aaron. If you have a friend or relative who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I got to say, folks, you need to go out and get the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available for purchase on Amazon for only like $7. And then if you love the mob, you're going to want to get Gary's app, The Kansas City Mob Tour. For $1.99, you can take your own personalized tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City. And then if that's not enough, Gary's got a book he just released this last year called Leaving Vegas.
How FBI wiretaps ended mob domination of Las Vegas casinos.
And if that's not enough, then you got to get the Kindle version, because the printed version doesn't actually have the audio that they used to convict these guys. And that is what the book's about. Gary has distilled the conversations down to the most salient points. And then if you get the Kindle for like $1.99, you can actually listen to the words from the mouth of the men that did it. I'm trying to think what else. You know what else? Go ahead and put a hit out on our donate button.
Yeah, you can be just like...
just like Bill McClendon, who is now a capo for the Youngstown, Ohio gangland wire mafia. We're setting up a mob all over the country, all over the world, and you can be part of it. We've got a guy in Milwaukee. Actually, it's Racine, but we're going to give him Milwaukee until somebody from Milwaukee comes along.
Yeah, so somebody from Milwaukee, you can come in here and knock out the Milwaukee mob guy.
And he's going to have to go back and be the, you know, the mob boss of Racine.
Yeah, he'll have to be the Racine, or maybe he'll just be an associate working for you. We got somebody, and I know we got a guy up in Smithville, Capo de Tutti de Capi, our good friend Barry. Barry, I hope you're listening to this podcast. I know you're still listening to him. You mentioned not too long ago to me how you knew how much effort and work that we had to put in to keep one of these out, fresh episode coming out every week. And we're not complaining. It's a labor of love, but we do have some studio expenses here, don't we, Aaron?
It's not free. It may be free to you. It's just not free to us. So we would like to thank all the folks that give us a little financial support to make this possible, like my good friend and fellow comedian, Elliot Threet.
Oh, yeah. Elliot took care of you, didn't he?
Thank you.
Really took care of you, Elliot. You're a good guy.
He saved our bacon.
Yeah, he did.
To say that. So if you want to save our bacon... It's about $800.
Yeah. Anyhow, so say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Bumper music provided by Audd-O-Matic. Expensive, and that is, you got to kind of narrow it down to, you know, just really salient points.
Yeah.
In terms of whatever that storyline is to go to. And then, you know, I see some stuff where it's so tightly shot that you know, it's like, oh, hey, it's a gloved hand reaching in.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, can't even, you know, it's like, the actors aren't really necessarily, they don't look like the guy.
You can do a lot with that.
They shoot him from behind or, you know, stuff like that.
You can do a lot of stuff.
But it takes a lot of planning to think through that.
And it's hard to do to really make it look right, make it look good. It's, I don't know, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's
to hard. Light it and to.
Yeah. And not make it look amateurish. Anyhow, let's do this thing.
You know, the women in film are having their meeting tonight. They do the second Tuesday or the second Wednesday of the month. And they were having something tonight about some basic film production. How many of you looked at your YouTube Gangland Wire to see if any of the episodes you put up through YouTube as just audio files get much traffic?
I haven't for a while. I'm getting some. I get a new subscriber, you know, like once every 3 or 4 weeks, 2 weeks, I get a new subscriber. So I figure I'm sure they're there because of the podcast. But I haven't looked for a while.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
It's getting some. But you know, I looked at the big boys when I first did this, and they're doing them, and they weren't getting very much. Like Generation Y, they weren't, you know.
Yeah.
Wasn't anything like what they're getting off their audio podcast. You get a little bit off of it. Just one more way people
can just one more find, way to try to connect
the main
and you
thing
know.
Is people can they'll use it as a search engine and they'll find you and then they'll go to your podcast.
Yeah.
So I ought to put some more up, but it's kind of a pain in the ass. I got enough up that they'll find me. Let me see here. Right. Yep. Try to shut this down.
It's got some fan noise. It's pretty loud. There.
Hold on, I'm going to run the restroom.
I just quit.